Hello and welcome. My name is Blanna Tracy and this is my podcast, Untold. Across this 10-part series, I'll be taking a look at different facets of Irish society and speaking to people with unique voices and stories. In this episode, I speak with my close friend and colleague, Stephen Byrne, who shares his experience of dating abuse. At the time, he was only 19 years old, recently out, and at the very beginning of his TV and radio career. This is Stephen's story. Welcome to my podcast, Stephen Byrne.
How's it going? How are you?
I'm good. I'm really good.
I love just being in your home like this.
Aww. Have the stove lighting as
well.
The
stove that you never shut up about for about 2 years.
I know. It's the best thing that's ever happened to me.
Any sentence that she ever created for 2 years was about a stove.
It's true.
Yeah, it is a great stove.
So if you hear some crackling in the background, that's what's going on. I'm just trying to create a nice ambience.
A little bit ambience. Yeah.
That's it. Exactly.
Ambience.
Well, listen, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it. And especially appreciate you opening up about such a sense of topic, but I think that we had a little conversation about it before and you feel the same kind of way that I do, that it's important to share these stories because you never know what actually helps somebody else. And also the fact that people don't know this about you as well is kind of
completely. I think
it's interesting to delve in.
I think a lot of people become closed off after things like that, and for a while I had to kind of overshare in order to normalize it, if that makes sense. So for years I just became very comfortable with actually talking about stuff that happened to me that other people might not like other people to know. And I had to do that in order to make it real, because it wasn't real in my head. It felt very much like a movie. So like the more I said it and the more I got reactions off people being like, oh my god, it became something that was like, okay, actually that did happen.
So let's go back, I guess, to the start. So what age were you when you started going out with this guy?
I was 19, I think. Yeah, 2009 it was. Yeah. So it was my first ever relationship with a guy. So it was a big deal in that. Head over heels, absolutely falling all over the place. Totally just completely in awe, which is a dangerous game. So it was like, it was, I think, the summer of 2009. And first time anything kind of ever happened in terms of him, I guess, hitting me or anything like that was kind of about 8 months in. Kind of found that he might have been thinking about being unfaithful and confronted him about it. And it was, I remember we were in a hotel and we were in Dublin. It was actually the first ever day I did Tube, which is mad.
Oh, weird. Yeah.
So he'd come over to see that. Because I'd been on RT for a year already. So I was doing a YouTube show.
So for people who don't know, Stephen and I used to host a show called Tube together on RTE, which is a national broadcaster in Ireland. And it's kind of like a magazine entertainment show. And we'd be interviewing lots of different guests and stuff. So
it was my first ever time hosting that. For my first ever time being on TV, pretty much, because I worked for RT for a year, but it was a YouTube show that we were doing.
Yeah.
So it was.
So he was over to kind of see.
To see it. Yeah, to watch it.
So you stayed in a hotel.
Stayed in a hotel.
That night?
That night.
Okay.
Kind of got it just for the occasion.
To celebrate. Yeah.
And all that. And I remember getting home after and all that. And I confronted him and said, you know, I'd seen messages and all this sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And obviously he didn't know how to react. So he kind of got a bit hysteric and headbutted me.
He headbutted you.
Yeah, that's the weirdest thing about it, because it's the sort of thing, like, you can see a punch, but a headbutt just kind of comes from nowhere.
But it's also, it's literally so in your face. Mm. Like, it's so aggressive. I mean, any sort of violence is really aggressive, but I mean, was he holding your arms down?
He was sitting down, I remember, and I was kind of talking to him and he stood up. He was very tall. He was about 6'2".
Physically intimidating.
Yeah. And then just did it. It was a shock. And I was like, you got to go. Mm. And for whatever reason, kind of broke up for like 2 weeks. But I went back because I was hooked.
Okay. So can I just ask you a little bit? Because a lot of people, I mean, they think, when they think of like domestic violence and dating violence and abuse in relationships, they think, I mean, like, why did you put up with it? Why did you stay so long? But I mean, you said the first time that he put his hands on you was about 8 months in. So were there, when looking back on it now, were there any kind of red flags of insecurities or him trying to take control?
I mean, the red flag should have been the reason why I was even that obsessed, you know, being that in awe of someone and being completely indebted to them and all that sort of stuff is a dangerous game, because it means that it's, you know, it seemed like, you know, it was the best thing in the world and nothing mattered in terms of that. Like, I would have given up my work. I would have given up. I would have moved to London. He lived in London. I would have done all that if that was what it called for. I would have literally done anything.
Wow.
And I think it was just because it was like my little escape. Like, I'd only just come out and I, for some reason, didn't feel totally comfortable maybe in Dublin. Mm-hmm. Because I had a little bit of shame kind of around coming out and all that sort of stuff. So being over in London just was this kind of new open world that I could almost escape to. So there was that.
Yeah. You're anonymous as well.
Yeah, because I wasn't even out in work at the time. Nobody knew that.
So was that kind of difficult then for you? You know, this guy, he's come over to Ireland. You're celebrating your debut on TV. You're staying in a hotel that night. It's all exciting. But then he headbutts you. Mm. And then, you know, lots of people in this country don't know that he's your boyfriend. So, I mean, what did you do? How did you deal with that?
Well, I had to go into work the next day and pretend that I got, that I walked into a door is what I said, because I obviously had, you know, bruise around my eye and my nose and stuff. So I remember being in makeup, and it was my second day ever on YouTube, and I was like, oh yeah, yeah, no, I walked into a door. I'm an idiot. All this sort of stuff. Mm. And because I couldn't process it. Like, it was very difficult to actually understand what had happened.
Yeah. So when he did headbutt you then, like, how did you react and what happened?
I told him that I was like gonna get him on the next flight.
Okay.
Basically, it was like, you need to go. This is, you know, because not only had I kind of thought, like, because of messages that I'd seen that he was going to cheat on me, there was also this, I kind of just trying to have to process what actually happened after. So there was two things. And then also processing the fact that I had to break up with him. In my head, I was like, I have to. This has to happen.
Yeah.
But I knew that that wasn't going to be the case. It was 2 weeks. You know, I told like two of my friends, I think, and then, and then, yeah, 2 weeks later, I went back. And yeah, it was like, I think from then on as well, in the months after that, it was doomed because of what had happened anyway.
Okay.
I didn't necessarily think it was going to happen again. I don't even remember saying anything like, don't ever do that again or anything like that.
Yeah.
It was just like out of sight, out of mind. I think we just didn't talk about it.
So that first night when he did, he had butted you, he left the hotel that night and he went back to the UK.
Waited till the morning, yeah. And then went back. Yeah.
Okay. And you essentially broke up with him.
Yeah.
And he was gone out of your life. So did he start, was he texting you, kind of emailing you, sending you messages all the time?
I think so. I think I was getting a few here and there. But it was kind of like, maybe we will like get back together, but this is just, we need a bit of space. Like,
okay.
That's what we kind of agreed on. But I knew that I was going to, because I was trapped, definitely, okay. You know, by just how, I guess, intense the whole situation was and how much I'd put into it already. I was probably kind of in my head like, oh, you know, I've probably wasted a lot of energy and time with other people to see him and be with him. So yeah. I can't throw this away.
Okay. And so what happened next? So 2 weeks later, you decided to give it another go.
Give it another go. Continued kind of for the next few months. I just started YouTube, which meant that I was working a lot more. So I wasn't able to go to the UK as much. So, I mean, that naturally put a little bit of strain on things. And then I think it was June 20th. Oh, why do I remember dates like that? But yeah, it was June 2010. And we were just sitting on the bed and he was texting one of his friends. And I saw, like, looking over, that he was like saying something about me, like insulting me, kind of being like, oh, with my, I don't know, just called me a name or something to his friend on his phone.
Wow, okay, you saw this.
I saw it and I confronted him. I was like, why are you doing that? And he was like, why are you reading my messages? And I was like, because I just looked over and I saw it. And then literally out of nowhere, just punched me in the face.
Wow.
And
were you anticipating it? Did you think if I confront him now, physical might happen?
No, not at all. I hadn't thought about it. And I remember just standing up from the bed and running over to the where the mirror was and just looking, and I could see already my face was yellow.
Hmm.
And I was started to gather all my stuff and was like, I've gotta go. But I didn't believe I was gonna go. I was very much like, I'm just gonna go. Like, and was almost delaying myself to prolong the whole action of leaving.
Yeah.
By just, you know, grabbing clothes and then looking in the same place again and all that sort of stuff.
Just slowly gathering your stuff.
Slowly.
Were you waiting for him to say something or for him to like apologize?
Yeah.
Did he say sorry?
No, not then. And then, yeah, I was gathering everything and I don't know what I picked up. I think it was something, we like had both owned or something. I picked it up and I was like, I'm taking this, blah, 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 yeah, or whatever.
Okay.
And then I was like, I'm going to tell your mum like that this happened or whatever. And he was like, no, you can't. And we were actually standing kind of in where his mum's room was. And I turned around and he headbutted me again.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Except this time, like my nose just started fully bleeding all the way down me.
Wow.
Blood all over like her carpet, like all over. I just went into the bathroom and was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
And my nose was
busted.
Yeah. Busted. So.
And was she in the house?
No, she wasn't.
So there's no one else in the house?
No one else in the house. So I basically just said, I need to go. I don't know what's going to happen, but I need to go to the hospital. I'm going to go.
Yeah.
So I went down like in a town that I didn't even know, you know, really that well. And
you went into A&E?
I went into A&E and said I got beaten up on the street. And while that was all happening, I was getting texts from him being like, you know, if like he was saying he was going to like burn the house down, like if I didn't come back, like that's, so I was like, I'm going to come back. Everything's going to be okay. And since the last time that it happened, my friend had, who I actually didn't even know that well. I was a YouTuber at the time, so like I knew a lot of people, but I didn't really know them, if you know what I mean. Like
internet friends
and okay, all that sort of stuff. So a friend of mine had known what happened before, and he said that if anything ever happened, to let him know, because he only lived like 45 minutes away.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that, because you said that you mentioned to two friends before, yeah, when he headbutted you for the first time. And so one of them actually said, if it happens again, get in touch with me.
That this was actually someone who my friend had told.
Yeah. Oh, no.
As a sort of a, if anything happens over there.
Okay. Okay. So this is like not, yeah, just not gossiping, but no, as in if an, he needs help.
Yeah.
Please be there for
please
him.
Be there. So, yeah. Didn't know that kind of his mother had been through kind of a similar situation. And just, yeah, I went back to the house and kind of was like, look, everything's going to be fine. I'm not going to leave you. It's going to be okay. Just because I was worried. I was worried that he was going to do something, or he was going to hurt himself, or that something was going
to
happen.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, he was threatening to burn down the house, yeah, if he didn't come back to him. And in the meantime, when you were in the hospital, you were texting your friend saying, look, I need some help.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And what did your friend say?
He was like, come straight here. So yeah, I got straight on a train. Then after I went back to the house.
Calmed the situation down.
And still not kind of processing it. Well, I mean, I didn't process it for years, but just trying to figure, and also just being angry at it for happening. Like, why did you ruin this? Why, like, this was good and this has ruined this. And then, yeah, I just got in a thing and stayed there for about 5 days because I was so scared to go back to my parents because they weren't fans of him.
And they didn't know, obviously, that he didn't put it to you the first time.
So I was afraid that it was going to be a case of, I told you so. Not in a, you know, a way, but just kind of like, oh God. You know?
Hang on. So did you tell your parents that he touched you the first time?
No.
Sorry. But they just didn't like him.
They didn't like him.
Okay.
So yeah, I was afraid that it was going to be something like that. Not that they would ever do that, but like, I just was like, I was saying that to myself, I think.
Yeah.
Well, Why didn't you know?
You're like, 19.
This is your fault. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I went and stayed with my friend for like a couple of days and then kind of realized it was probably about time. And I remember everyone just acting like it was normal. Like everything was okay. Like I remember sitting inside and his parents did a barbecue and
aww,
this like gorgeous house in like South London. And just like, I was like, this is like a film. Like I'm just sitting here like in this like very normal and very like happy situation while all my whole world is falling apart and everybody's pretending like it's not.
Yeah. And was this, do you think that that was probably, I mean, what do you do in that situation? You're lost.
I didn't talk about it to them at all. Nobody asked me about it.
Okay. They just, they knew the situation, but they didn't kind of pry.
Yeah.
Okay. So I presume your nose, was it broken?
Yeah, it had been fractured.
Okay.
Which is a break.
So, I mean, that means you have two black eyes, basically.
Yeah, two black eyes, yellow eyes, all that sort of stuff. Had, you know, God. The full on kind of, like a boxer plaster over my nose. And
so, I mean, what did you say to your parent? You flew back home.
Flew back home and went to see one of my friends who I told the first time. And he was working with his mum in like a creche and called over there. And I remember him coming out and just being like, oh my God, are you okay? Like, I was like, I have to call my mum. Like, I have to let her know, like, to get me or to pick me up or to, you know, I've got to go home.
Yeah.
So I called my mum and told her that I was in the local town, and she came to pick me up, and I remember her just getting out of the car and seeing my face, and I could just see the concern, just like the, yeah, just the, oh my God.
Do you think she knew immediately what had happened?
Oh yeah. Yeah. She instantly kind of went, that must have happened. Like, and she just asked me, are you okay? And I said, I am. I was like, I think I said he hit me. And she just, I could just see the pain in her face.
Of course, she's devastated. She wants to be to protect you, but...
And she didn't say it. That's the greatest thing in the world. She never said, you know, I told you, or it's, you know, he was, or never called him a name, or never was like, he's a whatever. Mm. It was just like, are you okay?
Okay.
Yeah.
And was that it for you then? Like when you got home and you told your parents and...
I told my parents and I remember we had a barbecue. So maybe barbecues are the things to try to distract yourself. and nobody talked about it. It was all just very much... And I remember my auntie coming over and she was standing outside and we were all sitting outside and eating, and it just felt weird. I was just like, we're just acting like everything's normal here.
Why weren't they talking about it?
I think they knew I didn't want to.
Okay.
And I was quite like just closed off about things in general then anyway. You know, I'd only come out maybe like 9 months before, a year before. So everything was new territory for everybody.
Okay.
So in that case, yeah, it was very much, he'll talk about it when he's ready to talk about it.
Yeah. I know then.
And we never really did.
You never did talk about it?
Not really.
What did your dad say?
Well, my dad actually brought me to the UK about a month later to go to the police and make a statement.
Okay.
And talk about it and all that sort of stuff.
But he didn't actually talk to you one-on-one about it?
Even on that trip, he wasn't.
Okay.
We didn't really talk about it either until I was in the police station and was making a
statement.
A statement, yeah.
And what was... I mean, that's amazing that he actually was like, I'm going to stick up for my son here. Mm. Maybe he didn't have the language or the tools to deal with it, but he knew that the law has been broken.
Yeah.
And this is the one thing that I can do. I can bring him to the police station and potentially get him charged.
Yeah. Yeah. My dad's fantastic, you know.
Yeah. He's a sweetheart.
So we did that. I don't really remember much of that just because, and we met up with his mom and kind of told her everything as well. That was kind of like, for me, I think that was a closing of a chapter. I had to kind of like put a full stop on it. You know, telling my parents obviously was enough, but meant definitely, you know, going to the police and all that was a way of just kind of underlining it and being like, okay, done. This is, I have to get through this.
Okay. And had you spoken to your ex at that time?
Yeah, I had. I had been in conversation. And yeah, we'd spoken about, not about, he knew that we weren't getting back together. So like he obviously went on the attack and accused me of cheating on him, which I didn't.
Wow. Okay.
And just started like saying things online and all that. That's why I went to the police. I was like, okay, I need to, if he's getting aggressive online, I need to go and make this stop.
Yeah.
And that's the only way I can think of doing that is to go and report it, because if he's not afraid of, you know, hurting me publicly or anything like that, then he'd hopefully be afraid of the police and that would be able to put a line underneath it.
And it did.
And it gave me that time to think. But like, I mean, the aftermath of something like that is something that, you know, you think, I thought I processed quite quickly. But you don't. It definitely stays with you until you know that it's definitely not there anymore.
Yeah. I mean, what happened when you went to the police? You made your statement. Like, did the police call over to his house and say, look,
I don't know,
we know what's happened?
Yeah. No? I kind of just left it at that.
Okay. Yeah. So that was it for you. You made your statement. It's on record what's happened.
Yeah, they were going to get in touch and all that. I mean, it's a very difficult thing to, you know, for someone to be charged with and all that sort of stuff. And I didn't really even want to kind of go further with it. I just wanted to make the statement and have them brought in and all that sort of stuff. That was it.
Okay. So that was kind of closure for you. You flew back to Ireland. You'd spoken with his mother. You probably obviously said to him, look, I'm going to the police and telling the police what's happened.
No, I didn't tell him that. I just
Oh, you didn't? Yeah. Okay. And did he stop attacking you online then?
Yeah, it did. It calmed down. Well, like directly, I think. But yeah, that was the end of talking.
Communication with him.
Yeah, it was all done.
Okay. So he never tried to get in touch with you again?
In the years going by, I did, like, I think I saw an email over the years, and I eventually did reach out to him.
Okay. Not too long ago, actually, was it?
Yeah, about a year ago. So, like I said, getting through something like that is tough. And I very much normalized it by saying it to people. Like, I would tell people all the time. I was like, oh, yeah, this happened to me. Well, sort of just like...
Almost make a joke out of it.
Kind of like, yeah, isn't that crazy? Yeah, it's pretty awful. Like, you know, like it felt like a movie. I made it into, like, I always say that, like, I separate my life into two parts, and I've stopped doing that, but I very much was always kind of the person before and the person after. And almost felt like anything that happened before didn't really happen to me. It actually felt like my life before it didn't happen.
Really?
Yeah. Like in my head, I created that idea. Like, it was almost like it was just like I arrived on Earth the day after.
Okay.
Which is kind of a weird feeling, and it also creates this disassociation with your, you know, early life that I still somewhat have. Like, I would still kind of have a feeling of like, just not anything kind of before that doesn't feel real.
Maybe that also could have, well, I don't know, but I'm just thinking, you know, when you start getting out this guy who's your first boyfriend, you know, you kind of recently come out. So that whole period before that,
it was a different person. Somewhat. Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's definitely part of that. But yeah, just compartmentalized it into a place in my head that made the whole situation almost like a fictional story.
Like, it didn't. 'Cause I remember the first time you told me that it happened, and I almost, not that I didn't believe you, but I was like, wow, he's really just kind of saying that. He's just throwing it out there and kind of saying it in like a normal voice and not going like, listen, this really awful thing happened to me. You were just like, oh yeah, my boyfriend headbutted me once, he broke my nose. And it was like, what? What?
Yeah.
That's very serious. But you kind of would just throw it out in a very just like blasé, whatever.
This is part of it. I think the reason I did that was obviously because I was like, this is obviously a big part of me. And maybe it's a big, big part of the context of maybe who I am or why I'm certain ways or whatever. But also it was just to normalize it in my head.
Yeah. Okay.
And also to be like, it's not a big deal because I'm laughing about it or I'm whatever.
I've
dealt with it. It's fine. Don't have sympathy for me. Blah, blah, all that sort of stuff.
But actually you hadn't dealt with it.
No, I hadn't. No, not at all.
So how did it kind of rear up again? Like how did it affect you later on as the years went by?
In general, like, you don't really think about the underlying effects of something like that. So like, it's the very obvious effects of, oh, I remember walking down the street and like someone walking by me and getting instantly just afraid that someone's gonna headbutt me. Like, I just had that sort of fear of being headbutted like on the street. And then just on a confidence level, I think it just, you know, it even though you subconsciously you might not think about it, but it probably makes you feel like you're worthless. Like, so like, if someone could do that to you and someone that you love, then what could anyone else do to you? Because like, that's the person that you trust the most. So if you can't even trust that person the most, how bad are everybody else?
And did you find it hard to start relationships?
Yeah. I mean, I threw myself into one maybe like a year later. And that was a little bit obsessive, probably, because I almost was trying to fill a void. And then for the guts of 3 years, didn't see anyone else.
Just, yeah, I remember that period. That's when you and I actually started becoming friends. Yeah. And you, there was no, like, you were kind of maybe going on dates here and there, but there was no one serious.
In those 3 years, I didn't have a single date.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Just was done with it. And then, I remember that year, I think it was 2014. I was like, no, you gotta get over this. You gotta get back on this. You gotta, all that sort of stuff. So I like started going to the gym, started looking after myself, mm-hmm. feeling a little bit more confident about myself because of that. And just threw myself out, and, you know, I got in a relationship again that ended quite badly again.
Not in
a physical way. No. But there were things in that I kind of noticed as well that were affected by, like, if we ever had a fight, I would grab my ex's hands and kind of like hold them. And I remember once he said to me, he was like, "Don't put your hands on me." And I was like, that instantly resonated with me because of what had happened before. I was like, I'm not doing that. And then I realized, I went, oh my God, I'm trying to make him not hit me.
You're trying to protect yourself.
I'm trying to protect myself.
But actually,
even though he was never going to do it.
Yeah, but actually he felt like you were.
Yeah, like, but it was just my immediate reaction to literally like just hold his hands down by his side.
Yeah. Just don't touch me, kind of protecting yourself. But he's there kind of going, what the hell are you doing?
Why are you holding me down?
Yeah. Did you explain that to him?
Yeah. And I, like, even in the heat of an argument, I remember him being like, okay, I get that.
Okay.
Yeah.
He knows that it wasn't you trying to kind of do anything to hurt him.
Mm. And that was like, that was a good moment when I figured that out.
Yeah.
Like, it was obviously in the heat of an argument or something like that, but I remember kind of being like, oh, wow. And it was also just this realization that so much of who we are and what we become and things we do, things we say, decisions we make can be based on a 30-second thing that happened, you know, 9 years ago.
Yeah.
And I think that was kind of the moment where I was starting to accept it. In order to move forward with anything, you have to accept things that happened. And also that there's nothing more beautiful in the world than time. You know, time for so many people can be a scary thing because it runs away from you and you get older and you wrinkles and you're like, oh, where's my life going? And I need to do this. Oh my God, I'm this age and I haven't done this yet. I got married and all. Like, time for me is one of the most beautiful things because I always compare things that happen to you, like, you know, physical trauma and mental trauma in the same way. And we try to do that with mental health all the time by being like, mental health is equal to physical health.
Mm-hmm.
But even in a visual kind of way, I try to be like, and I say this to people whenever they have a breakup or lost all my one line, but it's something that I kind of just carried from that was, you know, like if you cut your arm, you have a cut and you can see it and it's open and it's all that. And time is the thing that's going to heal it. And eventually it will go away and you won't be able to see it anymore. And I try to compare, you know, like a physical wound in the same way that you would compare that. You know, if something bad happens to you like that,
mm-hmm.
you can see it, it's there. It might get infected. If it gets infected, you need to get in there and you need to get that infection out.
Yeah.
And that's the only way that it will heal. And then once you get that infection out, it'll heal. And if there's a scar, that's just something that has, you know, stayed with you. But it's a reminder that, you know, you're able to heal.
No.
So that's kind of what I took from all of that. And kind of always kind of kept that idea when anything bad has happened is just to think, you know what, like, this is awful now, but we have time.
Exactly.
And we always have time.
Exactly.
And time will be with us and time will fix us.
Yeah. And so how do you feel now?
I feel like it happened, like, which is one of the biggest obstacles that I probably had to overcome. And I mean, I wouldn't necessarily go as far as saying I'm glad it happened. because like
that, nobody wants that, to deal with that
and that poor kid, and I feel like I lost a number of years that I should have been out having fun and enjoying my sexuality and meeting people and all that, you know, my 21 to 24, like, you know, important years. I lost a lot of time.
Okay.
And yeah, I feel like I sent him an email basically last year.
Really? You got in touch with him again?
Got in touch with him. Which, yeah, like a lot of people I know were kind of like, why would you do that? But I went to kind of see how he was. I had just got out of a relationship and I was thinking back about what had happened and was just like, okay, I need to kind of put, you didn't have any online profile. So I was like, God, I hope he's okay. So I, yeah, sent him an email and just said, look, I can't say I forgive you for what happened, but I just want to let you know that I'm okay and I'm over it. And I hope you're okay and I hope you're doing good.
Wow. And did he get back to you?
Yeah, he about a month later, I think. It was obviously an old email that I had from years before. And he just said, thank you. Like, I'm doing really well. And that has actually helped me a lot. And that that's done a good thing for me. And then didn't reply, just left it there.
And that's it.
But sending that email was a very cathartic thing. Like, it definitely pulled the plaster off and let me see that actually I was okay and I was healed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What a huge thing to do. And it's funny. I mean, all those years later, almost 10 years later, it still affected you. And the fact that you're saying now, yes, it did happen, but I'm okay.
Yeah.
Like, you've come to terms with it now.
Yeah. It was just about, it was just about confirming it. Yeah, is the best way to put it. Just about making myself realize that in order to move forward, I had to, or I don't remember because it's so long ago.
Yeah. But I guess for anyone who's listening right now, I mean, a lot of the time domestic abuse starts very young in relationships. It doesn't happen when you're married and you're like 45 and you've already had loads of kids or whatever the hell it is. Like, this, it happens in young relationships and dating relationships, and people don't talk about it at all. It's so prevalent. There's psychological abuse, there's blackmail, there's so many different ways. There's lots of ways that people can be stalked now, not just standing outside your house, all of your emails, your Instagram account, everything. They can all be hacked easily. You know, sometimes partners will demand passwords and try and take control of your life in that way, or they might have an intimate photo of you and they might say, well, look, if you don't do this, I'm going to send everyone that photo. So I think, you know, the landscape is constantly changing, and for any 19-year-olds, anyone, doesn't matter what age they are, what is the best piece of advice? I know it's such a cliche question, but what is the best piece of advice that you could impart and share with someone who's dealing with it right now?
It's, you know, every situation is different, but I think just like, get out. is that, you know, like, I went back and I know how, you know, I would look at someone else probably before that and be like, why the hell did you go back? You know, I just wouldn't have been able to understand it. Or, you know, like, I have friends who, you know, their partners cheated on them and then they've gone back to them. I'm like, why are you going back? But like, I did. So there's no, you're an idiot if you do, because I did. And I know why I did. I did because I loved him. And that was more powerful than anything else. So I would say, just talk to people, make it real, because it doesn't, I know what it's like for it not to feel like it happened, as much as it is going to like impact different parts of who you are and your personality and things like that, that you are strong enough to carry on, because time is on your side and you'll always get better. Everything always gets better. And just have faith in that and just surround yourself with the best people, and the people that won't be like, I told you so, or won't say, what were you doing, or he's a whatever, or just surround yourself with people that just make you feel comfortable.
Exactly.
And don't rush.
Mm-hmm.
Don't rush the other side of it, because, you know, yeah, it takes time.
It takes time. And thank you so much for your time, Stephen.
Thank
really,
you.
Really appreciate it. And I really appreciate you kind of being comfortable enough talking about this for
only
the first
you.
Time. No, I do. I really do appreciate it. And I know that you being so honest and open and just kind of actually saying exactly how you felt at the time is really powerful. And I think that it's going to resonate with a lot of people. And I hope that you're going to help a lot of people with your story. So thank you so much. If you have been affected by anything discussed in this episode, please listen to the bonus episode I did with Women's Aid CEO Sarah Benson. A massive thank you to Stephen Byrne for sharing his story, and you can keep up to date with him on Instagram at Stephen Byrne. Thank you to Taz and Rian Kelleher for the finishing touches and graphics. Thank you to my husband Charlie Moon for the beautiful music and support. Thank you to my agent, Jane Russell, for her encouragement. And thank you to all of you for listening. If you like this episode, please subscribe and share. Brand new episodes every Wednesday at 11.